For Notre Dame football fans, there's no sweeter sound than the words,
"Touchdown Notre Dame!"
or "Irish win."
He's in for a touchdown! The Irish have come from behind!
As a fan of the Fighting Irish, you know that Saturdays in the fall are not just game days. They are unforgettable experiences. Welcome to a fan's perspective on Fighting Irish football. This is Dome and Domer. Here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me, as always, Ed Jordanic. And, Ed, there's a ton of subplots to this game. One of them we're not going to get into too much, but I'm never, ever going to complain about the Notre Dame grounds crew ever again.
Yeah.
I think we saw the worst of it. I have never seen a field like that in all of my life. And I'm a critic of the Notre Dame grounds crew and the field that we've got, but that was literally pathetic. Not that it was an advantage to either team. They both were on the field, but certainly didn't help, that's for sure. So let's do this. Tommy Rees didn't have one of his better games, obviously. You look at what happened there in the first quarter, and I'm not sure I got any answers for it. I'll be curious as to what your take is on it. But probably the worst sign for me was when he had Michael Floyd on that underneath route, you know, where he crosses along the line of scrimmage. There wasn't any pressure. It wasn't like he had anybody in his face. All he needed to do was just dump the ball out there into the flat, and Floyd had at least 20 yards in front of him. And yet he just badly missed him. And I don't know what is going through or what led to that, performance that he had. But, you know, maybe it was just the, having his feet just not underneath him, and just the whole entire situation just got him muffled. I don't know. But he clearly just didn't respond for some reason Saturday night.
Yeah, it was pretty evident right from the get-go that, he just looked like he was playing scared. He didn't look like he was playing with any confidence, and I think part of that starts with up front. You know, I think we kind of found out it was kind of hidden a little bit last week, but we found out Saturday that Mike Golic Jr. is no Braxton Cave, and that really kind of messed up, I think, the internal dynamics of the line a little bit. They did not look very good. Got us off to a really shaky start. And, this is kind of a theme we've been harping on. I certainly don't think that Tommy Rees is a quarterback that can get you to a national championship, but it's kind of hard to argue with the results in terms of the wins that he's put up. But it sure was revealing kind of what that offense can look like if you've got somebody who can use the legs, and also somebody who has a stronger arm. And Hendricks made mistakes too. He probably could have easily had a couple of picks. It was kind of tough watching Tommy. It really was, because it looked like that first half of that Southern Cal game again, you know, all over again last year, just when nothing, you know, could go right. And, you know, handing them the ball in the red zone, like you said, the throw to Floyd, Tommy probably could have had another couple picks as well. And it was just it was a pretty ugly performance. There was no running game to speak of in the first half, and once again we saw a team that just was not ready for the bright lights for their moment, and that was really disappointing. You know, once the butterflies were gone, once the pressure was off, once they were playing from behind and dug themselves a big hole, you could chalk it up to Stanford being, you know, Stanford coasting a little bit, or to us kind of getting our feet underneath us. But then we settled down and played much better football. I mean, I thought Lewis yeah, they, played really well. Lynch played really
well. Yeah, they did play well, and that was in the absence of Stephen Tuitt, too. So, you know, give him credit for that. I definitely thought the defense responded in the second half. I probably am going to admit that some of it was Stanford coasting. I'm sure that played in. You know, they had a 14-point lead, and, you know, we never closed any closer than that. And they kind of played like they were up by 14. And ultimately 21.
And then they sucked us in on play action and made it 28-7. I mean, you know, they, yeah.
Yeah, and it just, you know, it is what it is. And although he slipped,
right.
I mean, I
right.
I don't
but you know what?
You know,
that guy is so tall.
He did fall.
I think I looked at the play
tall
again
guy,
cause
yeah.
I thought the
it
same
was,
thing. Like, oh, and I think Mata would have gotten beat on that play anyways. I mean, the ball was perfectly thrown, and it was right
yeah.
in the seam. There was no safety help, and or you know, additional help. I guess Mata's a safety, but. But you know that. Think about these kind of little things. I mean, look at the drop by Eifert. You know, you and I. It'd probably be just more entertaining for people who listen to this podcast if they could just read the transcript of our text messages to each other from last night. But you know that we both just. Yeah, I mean, you just throw up your hands in disbelief. You know, when Eifert, you're pretty much your most dependable receiver and just a big play guy. And you know, they're driving with a chance. Wasn't it 21-7 at that point? You know. Yeah,
I think it was. Yeah, it was a huge drop. There's no doubt about it. It was a huge drop. It, you know, and that's there were a bunch of things. I do think it's not to underestimate, but it really hurt missing Braxton Cave. There's just no doubt about it. I don't care what anybody says. I think it hurt without Jonas Gray there. I mean, it just is a big back that can knock some people off, and I think that had a factor in the game. We had three huge. Guys missing Jonas Gray, Brad.
I would argue
Stephen
four.
Too,
you know,
I think
with,
all
with Kaplan Lewis Moore, you know, out there. I mean, you know, you're putting this in this day and age. I mean, you watch some college football, and there's pretty much five or six down linemen that teams play with just because they're shuttling them in and out, and it's a pretty fast paced game. And you know, I would say, you know, having Tuitt and KLM out of the game, you know, that was. Well, listen, you could. I mean, Stanford has had some pretty difficult injuries this year as well. I mean, I think they've got they're starting their best defensive player, this linebacker, I think his name is Skov, S-K-O-V, has been out for most of the year, and they've had some other guys out. You know, one of their leading receivers is out. So, you know, that stuff comes out in the wash. But the biggest thing was, you know, what we talked about was having to have some semblance of a running game to keep Stanford honest and to keep Tommy on his feet. And we just did not come out of the gates with that. And so I would say the Cave injury was the one that hurt us the most.
Yeah.
And Jonas.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I mean, you know,
Jonas hurt too, yeah. I mean, that's just for as productive as he's been, that was tough to swallow. But all right, let's jump to some of these subplots. I mean, if you listen to the game crew that supposedly had access to Brian Kelly and did some interviews during the week, he pretty much made it clear that his number two guy was Dane Crist. That Andrew was going to see some snaps, mostly because we wanted to throw that wrinkle in there, and it was part of the game plan. But if it came down to it where we had to make a switch, it was going to be Dane Crist. He never saw the field. Why do you think that was?
I can only think of two things. The first would be is that, you know, as the season has gone on, I mean, we forget, you know, Hendricks has taken more and more reps, and he's just proven to be a better option for Kelly, and understandably he's keeping one eye on the future, and that's the reason. And you know, and the other is there, it, you know, it may have something to do with Crist. And you know, I mean, Kelly's pretty big about, you know, you put your personal situation aside during the season, and we'll talk about the pros, or we'll talk about fifth year, we'll talk about these things after the season. You know, maybe he's got wind of Dane, you know, making plans for himself for the future, either you know, definitely graduating and not coming back, or definitely you know, maybe trying to go play a year at some other school. And instead of kind of letting us know that and kind of throw, you know, making Dane look a little bit bad or kind of creating some sort of issue, you know, he's just basically, you know, decided that, you know, he'll kind of give him his due by still calling him the number two, but when it comes to actual, you know, getting on the field. But you know, yeah, there was certainly a part of that first half where I said, you know, get Dane on the field if you're trying to win this football game. Because we really haven't seen Hendricks play for any extended period of time. But as you saw him kind of get his feet underneath him, you can see why, you know, he would probably be just as good an option as Dane, you know, or pretty close. I mean, I think he's, you know, he's more mobile than Dane. They're both pretty, you know, they're both better than Reese, but that's, you know, you and I are a little bit quicker than Tommy. I mean, how he did not score, you know, on that touchdown run. I mean, two things, how he did not you know, get the ball to Sierre Wood, who was standing alone in the end zone. I mean, what I'm curious about is, did you notice, I mean, Sierre basically knocked a guy over and then was there free. And, you know, I don't know if the referees would have called something if Tommy would have thrown the ball. But then Sierre came up and made a nice block for Tommy, and he still couldn't get into the freaking end zone. I mean, it was just, you know, it was just a fiasco. And then we miss a short field goal.
Yeah, that really turned the tables. I thought, you know, there was two chances there when we were down 7-0. You know, obviously the fumble at the 24-yard line by Tommy. And then we come back after an interception, 1st and 10, we get to the 3-yard line, and then there's that ugly penalty that we seem to always have at the unbelievably worst time. And that's tough. I mean, it was that kind of stuff that's just really frustrating, and I, you know, for me, where the text started flying, obviously. But, you know, further on to that point, and I don't know, I mean, I think you're right about Dane. I just think that there's something going on there where, you know, Brian has just made the decision not to go with him, and it's just evident it's not going to happen. What you did see with Andrew is the ability to, I mean, that touchdown pass that he threw to Michael Floyd, that's not a pass that Tommy Rees can make. I mean, he just threw a bullet, and he, you know, you can get away with doing that, yeah, when you got.
And by the way, while we're piling on Tommy, let's not forget him. Just absolutely, just, you know, I mean, he had Riddick. It was a good play call. I don't generally like kind of the sprint out or the rollout kind of, you know, plays with Tommy, but it was a really good play design. Riddick was right there, and if he puts the ball in the right place, Riddick walks into the end zone. Instead, he twists him, you know, he throws it way over his, you know, left shoulder, and you know, it was just, oh, that was so frustrating, because that could have been a touchdown, too.
Well, it was. Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, he would have walked in, I thought. But, you know, it was just one of those games where I think Tommy just couldn't get it. I mean, he just couldn't get it.
And he was, you know, let's not forget he got hurt right away, too. I mean, I don't know how big a...
He did. He took a shot. Yeah. Yeah, who knows? I mean, he's definitely a tough kid, so it wouldn't surprise me if he was playing hurt and he shouldn't have been. That's the kind of kid that he is. But, you know, I do think that what we also saw was that, you know, it's clear, it is real obvious that Brian Kelly's forte is a quarterback that can scramble, is a guy who brings that running aspect to the offense. And I do think that once we see that, once that gets plugged in, you're going to see a lot better production out of Notre Dame's offense. And not that we're horrible this year at all.
Tommy's put up some good numbers, but you're right. It's just, we're just more, so much more difficult to defend if you can do that. So
yeah, it's just, it's no doubt about it. Let me ask you a question. I'm just philosophically thinking here. I mean, with everything that Brian Kelly has to deal with, and I am a firm believer that at Notre Dame, it doesn't get any worse than what it is when the demands are placed on the head coach. For all of the stuff that he's dealing with to run that program, is it asking too much for him to play calls or to actually make those?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, you know, he's done it his whole career. I agree that the demands are greater. I mean, I kind of look at the big picture this way. He's not going to give that up. You know, I mean, it's just not going to happen. I mean, that's, you know, that's his thing. I don't find a huge problem with some of the. I mean, there's things here, you know. I mean, that he gets cute at some times, and I think part of that was sometimes I think when you lose a guy like Jonas or you lose a guy like Braxton, immediately you are a little bit too concerned about things, and you immediately try to make up for it by the calls that you're making. But I think you make a valid point. I mean, you know, there's a lot going on, a lot on his plate, and you know, there were problems with communication, you know, at points in the first half where we were slow getting things off the deck, and that's really frustrating. And you know, that's certainly going to happen with Hendricks. It happened with him a couple times in the second half too, where, you know, things didn't get done in time, and he wasn't, you know, he obviously, you know, there were a couple instances where Tommy would have checked off by thinking it was a better play, and Hendricks went ahead with it, and we got tackled in the backfield. But yeah, I don't know.
It's
a good point.
It's just one of those things. I'm not saying that he called a bad game. Don't get me wrong. I just think that as a head coach, you know, you have a different perspective on the game when you're watching the ebbs and flows of what's going on. And when you're on the offensive side and you're involved at the level of detail that he's involved, and with all the demands that he's got going and putting together a game plan on top of it, of play calling throughout the entire game, I mean, that is an awful lot to ask of the guy. I just wonder if situations like that, you know, maybe that 4th and 4, instead of pooch kicking it, maybe you run the team out there to punt it because everybody's assuming that's what we're going to do, and then you fake the punt instead. you know, I just wonder if the advantages in doing that are things that can make a difference. The pooch punt I wasn't real happy with. It's just one of those things that you obviously can't practice at a ton. There's only one guy that has any shot whatsoever blocking it, and Tommy kicked it right into the guy. You know, I mean, there's only one. There's a 10-yard gap that you can kick through as a punter, and he just happened to kick it right where the guy was.
Well, to me, this kind of just plays into like the big picture and like what are Notre Dame fans left with after an 8-4 season, where it easily could have, woulda, shoulda, coulda, could have easily been 9-3, 10-2, whatever. South Florida turned into a horrible team. Michigan turned into a very, a very good team that I think it's a good chance they'll go to a BCS game and just got better as the year wore on. But, we should have beat them in Ann Arbor. USC and Stanford basically played to a draw when they played a few weeks back. USC has turned into, I think, a team that is a very, very good team. Matt Barkley's just gotten better and better as the year has gone on. So I think if you step back for a second, and what it really comes down to, it's a team and a program and a coach, frankly, who is still figuring things out and learning how to win and getting to the big time. I mean, this ain't Grand Valley State. It's not Central Michigan. It's not Cincinnati. And Brian Kelly's learning too. I mean, we're seeing some growing pains. I mean, he's a good football coach, but it's just a different level. And I think that the path to a national championship, which is what we want to get to, it goes through the SEC, right? So that I don't see that changing anytime soon. I mean, it's very possible that this year it'll be six national champions from the Southeastern Conference in a row. Okay, so Notre Dame's never going to be in the Southeastern Conference. They're either going to be an independent or they'll be in the ACC. I doubt very much that they'll be in the Big Ten. But the way that Notre Dame's going to play in a national championship game is if it gets a few breaks during the year, takes care of business against some lesser teams, some Wake Forests of the world or some Purdue's of the world, and wins its big games, and then plays an SEC team in the national championship and, gets a couple breaks and gets in a position to win. I don't think it's ever going to have a defense like Louisiana State's. LSU's. I don't think it's ever going to have a defense like Alabama's, but I think it has a chance to play in that kind of a game and pull an upset and win a national championship. So that's our lot in life. And so, but before you get there, you've got to check some boxes. And the box that we check this year, if your glass is half full, is that we won some games that we would have lost 2, 3, 4 years ago. We beat some teams that we should put a beat down on or that we should at least beat, but the teams that we played where we had basically the same amount of talent on the field, arguably a little bit more or a little bit less in the case of Michigan. Arguably a little bit less maybe in the case of Southern Cal and Stanford at some positions or whatever, but pretty comparable. We did not get the job done. We still kind of shrunk at the beginning of these games, got off to bad starts, et cetera, et cetera. So that has to be the next step. That has to start with the bowl game. Again, it's going to be against probably a Florida State team that's also 8-4, that's got its issues. So you got to go out and win that game, I think, or you got to play well. You got to get this quarterback thing figured out. And then you got to come back from Ireland next September and beat Michigan at home and start there and show some people that, Michigan's going to be good. I'm sure Denard's going to be back and they're going to, they're only going to upgrade. And then you got to go, you should, Miami's still struggling. And then you got to figure out you got to win a game next year like Oklahoma on the road, or you got to beat USC out in California. They're going to be good if Barkley comes back. So for the big picture, I just think that, it's slow, it's agonizing. We'd like it to be a lot faster. We'd like it to be what, Brady Hoke looks like he's done. We'd like it to be what, but they only had a 3-year kind of walk in the wilderness. The Rich Rod thing, it was just kind of just a mess, and they kind of got their heads back on straight. But for us, for whatever reason, it's going to take a little bit longer. We got to see something next year in these bigger games. We got to continue being the teams that we should beat, and then we got to show something in some of these bigger games.
I think that's really where we're at right now. Is we've done exactly what you said, which is beat the teams you should beat, It's just that when we get to those marquee games, those under the lights games, we just haven't. It's not so much that it hasn't even been that we didn't win the game, but we weren't really there at the end where the difference is made. It's 3 minutes to go and you're in the ball game. And we couldn't seem to get to that point. And unfortunately, that's what's in front of us. You know, it's going to be a battle next year for this team to wash that away from their taste buds. I mean, this has got to take that next step. And the way you take that next step is, I think, and I think you're exactly right about getting to the national championship. You got to win a couple games. You got to survive the gauntlet. And then you get into basically an overmatched team.
Right, and you got to get a little lucky, or you got to, you know.
Then you got to get lucky, and that's where coaching comes in. And there's just a couple things that I think that for me would be real good signs. One is you can't compete in college football today if your punt return is just, fair catching. You need a guy back there that is ultra aggressive, somebody that wants the football so bad that when it hits the ground, he's looking for the angle to pick it up, scoop it up, and go. It's just critical. You can't operate. It stacks the deck against you when you do that. So I'd like to see that improve going into next year, especially with all the talk.
And the bottom line is, but for George Atkinson's two returns, you know, our special teams were charitably a D+, C- this year, charitably. You know, I mean, the punter had an awful first month or two of the season and kind of sort of came around a little bit at the end. The punt return, you know, was obviously non-existent. David Ruffer had a terrible, terrible start and, you know, missed a short one yesterday. So, you know, the special teams, I don't know. You know, Mike Elston, you know, you talk about coaching and, you know, how much you got on your plate. And, you know, he does the defensive line, which is, I thought, really done really well and with some tough injuries. You know, so maybe you bring in somebody or shift that responsibility around. It sounds like special teams are kind of team coached right now. You know, what the hell? Go pay somebody, you know, $450,000 a year to come in and just do the special teams. You know, who knows what, you know, who's a recognized expert in them or something, or can really upgrade that. And I'm not talking about the specialists. I mean, I think to me that's just kind of, you know, luck of the draw. I mean, Stanford's kicker has had issues with extra points and stuff this year, didn't come close on their long field goal try. But, you know, they were 11-1. So, you know, you can hide some of those flaws. But I think, you know, kick returns, kick coverages, you know, not making mistakes, not making turnovers in the special teams games, those kinds of things, you know, and a decent punter, you know, you could get away with a guy who makes 10 out of 16 field goals during a year if everything else is pretty much buttoned up. But we were kind of pretty much, you know, average or well below average in all those categories this year.
Yeah, and that's the kind of stuff that if you are going to survive the gauntlet and get to the national championship game, you got to have those things greased and wheeled and in motion during the season, because you're just asking way too much when you put yourself behind the eight ball with that kind of an approach, and that's got to change. There's no doubt about it. I do think that also we need, as much as I like Tommy Reese, and I think he is a heck of a kid, there's no doubt about it, I just don't see him at the QB position next year and orchestrating the kind of momentum that we need. It's just too much of a disadvantage to have somebody back there in this day and age that just cannot scramble.
And you know what, Mike? It's not even that for me. You know what I mean? I mean, there are plenty of slow, you know, quarterbacks who can't scramble, but they don't miss throws like he misses throws, or they don't turn the ball over in key. You know, if it's the two things combined. I mean, it's easy to kind of point to his lack of mobility, you know, because he didn't score on a run and he gets, you know, whatever. But, you know, if he makes that throw to Michael Floyd, if he makes that throw to Riddick, if he makes that throw to Sierra Wood in the end zone, if he just tucks the ball and, you know, keeps possession of it, and even if we get a field goal out of it on the first turnover, you know, I mean, if he just does those little things that we wouldn't even notice or be talking about today, they'd just be other plays in the game, basically, because he just executed, you know, when he had to. You know, then the lack of mobility is so much easier to live with, and you can still see this. You know, I could still make a case for him possibly, you know, being a guy that continues to lead us to wins. But when you kind of start looking at the whole picture and see how he's kind of come up, you know, how he kind of, you know, came out yesterday, and not to just put it all on yesterday, but and then you see Andrew Hendricks and the way he moves and the other dimensions that he gives you. you know, they'll fight it out in the spring, and I don't know who'll play in the Citrus or in the in the Champs Bowl or whatever, but you're right. I mean, you got to give the other guys a shot, because it does throw a bunch of curveballs to opposing defenses when you've got that look.
It's a huge advantage. There's no doubt about it. It's just an absolute huge advantage.
And even though it was a small sample, it looked like he made pretty good decisions on the option. You know what I mean? You know, I agree.
Yeah, I thought it was a great pitch that he made to Sierra Wood. I mean, that's something you never would have expected. But I think it totally adds a dimension to us that allows us to. I mean, it looks like an offense that's running downhill as opposed to uphill. And I just think that with game time, he's going to get better and better and better. I still might argue that it may be Golson when it's all said and done. Just the athleticism that kid brings to the table. You sure hope that come springtime
he better be a tough kid, because I'll tell you that Hendricks basically got his head taken off on that one run up the middle, and I don't know if Golson would have popped right back up after that. Not that Hendricks popped right back up, but he didn't miss a play, and that was one heck of a hit.
He didn't, and that was a heck of a, that was a crushing blow. And that is the one bad thing about, you really need a guy that's able to, certain guys have that knack where they never get squared.
Yeah,
they never get hit
both.
Hard.
You know, you have to have Hendricks.
You do. You got to have that ability to just dodge the hits.
But you've got to have Hendricks and Golson ready to go. You know what I mean?
I agree. I think you have to, because inevitably you're going to
get them all in. You know, get as many mobile athletic quarterbacks as you can, and just get them all ready to play. I mean, I know you can't do that, but so we'll see how this 8-4 kind of shows up on the recruiting trail. If they can work their magic again this year, and land some big guys, towards the last couple months. I mean, it's going to be a real challenge, because there's going to be questions, and they're going to be
it's going to be a challenge.
That bad mouthed up and down the coast.
For me, that's the only that's the only thing I'm a little nervous about right now, is just the way that we kind of sputtered there. Is that going to have a negative impact here on us as we go out and recruit? And that's a problem. I mean, that's why I was so gung-ho on getting that win last night, because I really thought that would have been a huge momentum for us and a great propellant heading in. But, it is what it is, and I think that you got to keep with the same message that he's been doing, because he has been able to recruit with whatever that message is. And just, you got to hope like heck that he's able to pull it off somehow and keep the momentum going, because I do think it's going to get a little better. We're gonna get this thing figured out, and Brian Kelly, I think, is the kind of guy that once he gets his guy in there, it's going to be a different situation.
I think we're in a lot better shape than Will Muschamp and Charlie Weiss right now, I'll say that.
I'll agree to that 100%. Holy cow. All right, well, good deal. We'll leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanik, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.